Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In the first segment of our show, we're going to hear from Dr. Agnes Ward from Community Mental Health of Macomb County. So tell me a little bit about your work in the field of mental health.
Sure. Well, I am a licensed psychologist in Michigan. I am currently the program supervisor of the Macomb County Access Center, which is the access point into services for individuals who reside in Macomb County who also have Medicaid.
So, what types of mental health issues do you most commonly see in this work?
So, the population that we serve is we serve children and adults, and we serve individuals diagnosed with mental illness, with a developmental disability, as well as a substance use disorder, and we also see children with any severe emotional disturbances.
So you mentioned you connect these people with the appropriate services. Tell me a little about that.
The services that we might connect with, Access Center is the entry point into services. So we screen an individual over the phone, and based on the criteria, we then determine, our clinicians, our master's prepared clinicians, determine where the individual will go for treatment. So we really try to match treatment with the symptoms or the concerns that the individual is presenting over the phone. So it could be scheduling them with one of our clinics for outpatient treatment, or it could be more intense treatment. We also process emergency type treatments, paperwork regarding, more emergent type treatments like hospitalizations or crisis center services.
So are there any barriers that a person with a mental health issue might encounter in terms of getting service?
In general or through Macomb Community Mental Health?
I mean, in general.
Well, I think some of the barriers, just in general in the community and just in general in terms of mental health and the stigma of mental health, is there is still stigma surrounding mental health and getting help and getting treated for mental health. There's a lot of, society doesn't treat mental health the same as medical health. So there is still more empathy for perhaps medical concerns rather than mental health concerns. So some of the barriers to treatment can be the stigma. They can also be resources or lack of insurance, or sometimes lack of beds, really, in hospitals or in treatment settings. So those can be some of the barriers, and really just not knowing how to seek help. We're so used to, for medical conditions, walk into an emergency room to seek those medical services. But for mental health, sometimes people don't know where to go. They can still walk into an emergency room, but not everybody knows that they can do that.
So, in your work through the access point, how do you go about tearing down some of those barriers to make sure these people get the help they need?
Well, some of the things that we do is there really is no wrong door. So through Macomb County CMH, we do have a crisis center helpline that individuals can call and get referred to for treatment. We really train our staff to be warm and welcoming. We really take the time to listen to an individual's concern and really make sure that we direct them to treatment appropriately. And really give them the resources. Even if we can't service them, we give them a number of resources so that they can make those calls and get serviced properly.
So, in your time with Macomb County Mental Health, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Well, we have a number of success stories. I've actually myself have treated a number of children who have come back through and that I may have seen in the community as teenagers or, you know, I'm thinking of one case or as an adult, years later who have actually expressed gratitude and have expressed really, saying some of the individuals have actually said, you know, these services have saved my life. They have literally saved my life. And I, you know, before being in the role that I am in, I was a clinician actually doing face-to-face therapy and work. And you run into a lot of those success stories. And it's really just really great to hear. And this is, I think, why most of us are in this field and do this work is because... there are a lot of success stories, and a recovery is very different for everybody. And recovery doesn't necessarily mean the absence of symptoms. It might still mean that an individual lives with certain symptoms, but they are living and they are functioning and they are doing what they want to do in life. So, we do hear a lot of recovery stories.
So that brings up an interesting point. You mentioned some of these children are coming in with emotional conditions, emotional disabilities, yes, if you will. Mm-hmm. How do you go about reaching out to a child in that situation? As a lot of people might say, they're incorrigible or there's no hope for this person, so on. Mm-hmm. How do you go about that?
We have a really great services. We have a number of evidence-based practices. Where we have clinicians trained who undergo training consistently to be able to administer a number of different evidence-based practices. We screen for trauma. We screen for a lot of different things. And we work with the parent. We really get the parent involved. We work with the guardian, and we really... try to engage the child and try to engage the family into treatment, because a lot of treatment has to do with getting the main caregivers involved. So we do outreach as well through trainings in the community, through just getting kind of advertising out into the community and into the schools and through our partners. We really try to make it known that there are services and help available.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for mental health services and better quality, what would it be?
I think to the community and just about the services and the quality, I would say that I would do kind of a two-part message, really, that you are not alone, that an individual going through distress, an adult or a child going through distress, is not alone, that there is help available, there is hope available, and that there is great outreach there, that there are crisis lines. We have our own crisis center helpline. There is no wrong door through Macomb County Community Mental Health Services, and we are here to help and support an individual going through any type of distress.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
Stigmas surrounding mental health. One question, folks. Why? Why is it we can have compassion for someone who can't necessarily move around the same way or see the same way? But when it comes to somebody with a mental health condition, somebody who may have gone through something horrifying, leaving them with something like PTSD, we have a harder time reaching into our bag of compassion and coming up with something. Especially the emotionally troubled children she mentioned. They receive the appropriate treatment and the appropriate care now, when they're young. They may grow up with hope. A while back, I interviewed a woman named Joanne Dallaire, who told me the story of a young boy who had a decision to make, whether to harm another, or whether to break out of those patterns, become something better. And he made the right decision. And he went on to become a functional member of society. Why is it we have such a hard time looking at the idea that this is a real condition? This is something just as serious as blindness, paralysis, what have you. Maybe it's something we can't easily quantify, but to the individual affected, that makes no difference. It's still a part of their everyday life. And like any disability, a person with a mental health condition can and will achieve if they're given the right support and the right level of understanding. But if they're made to feel isolated, they're going to be the outcast. That simply exacerbates a situation. Why would we do that? Are these not people? Are they not worthy of our compassion? Are they not capable of growing beyond our expectations? I believe they are. I'm glad to see services increasing, opportunities increasing. But seriously, folks, when it comes to the impossible standard of who will accept, tear down the wall already. Otherwise, you'll build it so high, no one ever makes it across. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Are you a new or returning student at the university? Looking for a creative outlet that incorporates music and fun? Why not volunteer at CJAM FM? Volunteering isn't hard. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So grab some friends and email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located in the basement of the CAW Student Center on the UWIN campus. And tune into CJAM anytime on the UWinsor app or online at www.cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about mental health issues from Dr. Agnes Ward. In this segment of our show, we're doing kind of a follow-up to last week's story on Muslim disability issues. We're going to hear from Sukaina Dada, a friend of last week's guest, who's also a first-year PhD student at York University, and was referred to the show by our good friend Dr. Marcia Ryu of Disability Rights Promotion International. So tell me a little bit about your disabilities research.
Okay, so I've been primarily interested in looking at children living with disabilities from minority and marginalized communities. I actually began my journey, I would say. In 2008, I completed my master's in occupational therapy from McMaster University, and I became an occupational therapist. But while I was working with my clients and with the kids, I was just thinking, you know, I'd really like to understand more about lived experience. I really want to understand, you know, different theoretical perspectives, different takes on disability and human rights and equity issues. And so I left practicing as an occupational therapist for now, and I began the PhD program in critical disability studies at York University this year.
So you mentioned you had a particular interest in Muslim children with disabilities.
Yes, yes, correct. So in 2008, when I was completing my master's, my cousin at the time had just moved to Canada from Tanzania, and he was living with cerebral palsy, and I was the one primarily taking him to doctor's appointments and just to different specialists. And I noticed just in my experience that, you know, people, oftentimes the doctors, the neurologists, the different specialists were talking over him. They were not talking directly to him. Now, he's nonverbal and he doesn't communicate verbally. And at the time, he didn't have any adaptive equipment. And so, you know, but it really bothered me that, you know, why is everybody kind of just talking around him? And I also noticed that in all of the doctor's appointments that we went to, nobody really asked the family about, you know, any of their social or cultural considerations. Most physicians and most specialists we went to didn't even seem to realize that English was not the first language, but yet they were conversing in a dialogue that was clearly full of medical jargon and all that. And so it just really bothered me. And then I started to study families, Muslim families with children with disabilities. And in listening to stories, I realized that many people, especially new immigrants and refugees, were feeling the same cultural insensitivity. And so that's what I decided to embark on. And that led to the organization Smile Canada.
So what are some of the biggest barriers being faced by especially new immigrants coming in with children with disabilities, other than the language?
I think one of the biggest ones is just knowing to navigate the system. So, you know, when people move here, their children are going to public school, for example, and just not knowing about what an IPRC is or what an IEP is, but kind of being just pushed into some of these avenues without having adequate knowledge on what are the options. You know, does your child have to be put into a particular classroom? Is private school an option for you? And I think one of the biggest challenges for the people that I work with or I work alongside with are just that, you know, we're expected to navigate the system, but we don't even have a lot of knowledge on what are the healthcare supports. You know, is it you know, difficult if we say no, for example, to a support that is provided? And then the other piece is within the Muslim community itself, there is a lack of accessibility and inclusion within our own community. And so oftentimes families are isolated because they'll try and attend a weekend program or they'll try and attend an event at the mosque. And oftentimes the events are not inclusive. And I think that we've made many strides and there's definitely vast improvement in that area, but we have quite a long way to go.
So how do you believe we as a society can tear down some of these barriers?
I think first and foremost, just having conversations like this. It sounds simple, but it makes, you know, such a significant difference. One of the things that I do in my work is just I'm constantly recording and listening to stories and sharing those stories. And I think what happens with those narratives is we get an idea of what are some of the different situations that people are facing. And we start to realize that, you know, the solution is not one size fits all, right? The solution for somebody might be very different than the solution for somebody else. And so I think the first thing we need and that we should just keep doing is just sharing different experiences and knowing and understanding that people experience disability differently, families experience it differently, and the services and supports are not necessarily designed for everyone, if that makes sense.
When it comes down to it, ignorance and assumptions can be their own special brand of disability, assuming we all know everything about what'll work for everybody.
Yes. And I have to tell you, I've met many families who have, for example, faced Islamophobia when they're trying to access supports and services. They faced discrimination. Just, I'll give you a quick example. I had a family that I was working closely with, and they went to an appointment, and the family is from a place in Uzbekistan, and the facility said, well, we can provide you with services in Arabic. And the family said, well, we don't speak Arabic, so that's not going to help. And the facility was like, well, that's all we can do. And so I think, you know, that's just a simple example. But if families can't even access services and support, then there's a huge problem, especially since they're Canadian and they're here and they have the right to access whatever everyone else is accessing.
So to change tone a little bit,
sure.
In your research and all the work you've done, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
There has. I mean, I think one of the biggest successes for me personally that I've been able to witness, and I've been truly humbled and honored to be part of this journey, is the organization that began 10 years ago is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. And that's working with over 90 Muslim families who have children with different disabilities and different abilities. And we've really been able to see many success stories from many of those people. And that success really comes from the families themselves and their respective communities. But I'll give you an example. One of the true successes is these families are advocating for supports within their own faith institutions and their own schools and their own centers. And we've seen some great changes, taking place both on a physical level as well as a social level. We've seen, accessibility sort of open up physically and socially, which is really neat because people are able to participate in the events and classes that they'd like to participate in.
So if you could send any one message about the need for equal inclusion of all people, whether they have a disability or not, no matter the cultural background, what would you say?
If I could say one message, I would say diversity in Canada is our strength. I know that's somewhat of a political slogan, but it's really true. And, I personally have lived in Canada. I moved away to the States for about 7 years, and I recently returned. And, every day I just say that to myself over and over again, is that diversity is our strength. So whether that's different cultures or languages or different backgrounds or different abilities, I think that it's important for us to know that this is what makes us strong. And, within that, when we hold on to that, I think it's that that will make us keep trying to get better.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Call this overly simplistic if you must, but isn't the communication barrier a two-way street, really? If a doctor can't understand what a patient is saying, they may end up prescribing the wrong thing, misunderstanding the symptoms. Next thing you know, you got a malpractice suit. Thing is, you can't really assume what a person is or should be without actually spending time with them. Same is true in cultural beliefs. People assume, when they hear something like Muslim or from a different background, people tend to assume they know everything about what that means. They don't. If you've never actually gotten to know someone of a different background, who are you to judge? And even if you do know someone from that background and you didn't quite hit it off, so what? That is not indicative of all such people. Take it on an individual basis. It's not a hard concept. Stereotyping should have gone out with dinosaurs and platform shoes, in my opinion. Possibly the most difficult disability to overcome for any of us is to accept that we don't know everything. That even if we have all the bad news in the world, that we don't know everything about it. We don't know how good, decent people in other cultures tend to live. Nobody goes out of their way to glamorize somebody who's really trying to make a difference. Just to say, my people, whether from a different culture, whether they have a disability or not, are simply people, entitled to the same considerations, the same access as anyone else. These are valid stories, too. These are people of strength, character, and dignity. But disability really is a universal phenomenon. As a friend recently reminded me, no matter where you come from in the world, what you believe, if your leg gets injured, you're still going to find yourself limping along. No matter where you come from. Access to service, the need, and I dare say it, the right in this country to the best quality of access and care. It doesn't stop at just one type of person. You can't build the impossible standard. You can't make that wall so you find yourself alone. Because somebody will find a way to single you out. And if you've burned all your bridges, who's going to be there to help you navigate the system? Who's going to take a stand for you? Or you can actually embrace diversity. The key, my friends, is, was, and ever shall be taking it to heart. If you just do what you're legally required to do, you're denying yourself the opportunity to grow, to share in insights, to learn what human strength really looks like. If you never get to know a person with a disability, or you just get a steady diet of the same type of people over and over again, yeah, it becomes a homogeneous circle. And how can our minds expand when they're constantly exposed to nothing but the same thing? When did it become such a mortal sin to look beyond ourselves, to say, the world tells me I should be afraid of this type of person, or I should have prejudice, but I'm going to sit down for 5 minutes and talk to this person before I decide that I'm going to be the judge? Nobody put me in a position to be that. Nobody gave me superiority over another human being. Nobody can claim that. Because in the end, we're all just trying to live the best way we can. No matter where we're coming from, no matter how we look or move or think or speak. Truth is, humanity binds us together in a deeper way than we ever tend to realize. So, the question is, what is diversity to you? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.